The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
These NBA playoffs, like, thank God for the NBA. This bubble with zero COVID cases, by the way, University of Alabama alone, forget about like college football, the Big Ten, are they going to play, the SEC, all this stuff. University of Alabama, like 2 or 3 days ago, had over 1,200 COVID cases. The Big Ten knows of at least 10 players, 10 student athletes, who have a very rare heart condition that has been found to be correlated with COVID. The NBA has zero COVID cases. They're playing the playoffs right now. They got through their season. 82-game season became, for a lot of teams, 72 to 73 games. But the main thing is they got the local TV money to fully vest, to fully kick in by playing enough of their regular season games. Now we're in the playoffs, and what a playoffs. The one thing about the NBA is since the better team almost always wins, the nature of basketball, fewer players on the court than football or baseball, you can run your plays through your best players in crunch time, all that stuff. It's not even like one and done like March Madness. You have a best of seven. In a game like basketball, the champion's going to be crowned correctly. You're almost always going to get that right. But that's also a problem. Don't we want a little randomness injected into sports championships? No, it's about finding out who the best is on the field to play. No, it's not really. The drama of sports, you want some kind of unpredictability, and there isn't a lot in the NBA. And this season solves it. The fact that they're always on a neutral site. There's no travel, no home, no road. The team with the better record doesn't have that home court like they normally do. And just weird stuff with the stoppage of play and then the restart. We thought we'd get some kind of funky results, and so far, are you kidding me? In the first round, a game seven like the one we had last night, I know it was sloppy. I'm going to get to that in a second. If you're sitting there watching that game complaining that it's sloppy, come on. Rockets and Thunder with Westbrook and Chris Paul traded for each other in a game seven right now. This is so good, I can't take it. Okay, let me start with last night. Now, Donovan Mitchell's team lost. The Utah Jazz lost. And Mike Conley missed the last shot. But he had a good look, and it was down and out. Like, it went in and out. They said halfway down. It didn't go halfway down. It went a quarter way down. It went a third way down. But, like, he could have just as easily hit that shot, it looked like to me. And then they win, right? And why would they have won? Because, look, the whole game, both teams, the star players on both teams, Jamal Murray and Donovan Mitchell, were playing clearly on very tired legs. And you could see it, like, most of the team, like, there was just some ugly shooting, but a lot of the stuff was short. And okay, on that heave, if anything, it was a little strong, but you saw guys missing short because their legs are tired, of course, game seven, and you know, of a very hard-fought series. So Donovan Mitchell couldn't get it going in the first half, and they're obviously paying special defensive attention to him. Don't let that guy beat you. Gobert was excellent late, but what could he do? What does a great player do? He couldn't affect the game on the offensive end in the first half. He decided, and this hasn't happened for a lot of this series, I'm going to play defense on Jamal Murray. Give me the toughest assignment. And you couldn't have played better defense than he played on those tired legs. And then in the third quarter, and he still wasn't feeling it offensively, you could see it. That is an example of a dude willing his team into the game. Donovan Mitchell willed his team into the game offensively, even though he didn't have it offensively, by hook or by crook. He could see the shot wasn't falling. He had to get to the paint. And even the way he got to the paint, okay, that move's not working, that move, let's try this. He willed his team. Don't forget, they're down, what was it, 15 at a certain point? It was about to be, they're about to get rolled. The Donovan Mitchell team's not getting rolled in a game seven. It's not happening. He willed them back into the game in the third quarter. And if Conley's shot goes in, we're having a different conversation today. The Jazz are going forward. Donovan Mitchell is being rewarded with a maximum max contract, and he deserves every penny and then some. This is a truly great player. I saw greatness from Donovan Mitchell on a night when he didn't have it and his team lost to Game 7. I saw real greatness there. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Here's Donovan Mitchell after the game.
Gary kind of jumped out, spun. I didn't know where he was. He made a play. And then Mike made, they missed a layup and Mike came down and it looked good, man, but sometimes this is the way it works. This is just the beginning, and I'm ready to go hoop again right now, but this is just the beginning.
And he gets the ball poked away from behind, you know, at the end of that game, and what a blunder that would have been, right? What a miserable way to end. But then Jamal Murray, who, remember, he had a Habistro had this first, I remember, on Twitter. It was either 92 or 93 points over two games, Jamal Murray, without a turnover. Wait a minute. You're dropping almost 100 points over two games without a turnover? It's unreal. And by the way, Jamal Murray may have looked not as great as he really is because Jokic is so good at getting the team into the offense. You know, every time you got a big white guy who's not that fast but is a really good passer and really good offensively, people compare him to Larry Bird. But it is true. Bird was a forward. By the way, a small forward and a power forward who was also not exactly a point guard, but he played point. A lot of times he'd get the Celtics into their offense, not Dennis Johnson back in the day. And Jokic was used that way a lot of times. He would get the team into the offense. But what that did, just because he could do that, was take the ball out of Jamal Murray's hands. And so my assumption was, yeah, but Jokic is the better player. No, he's not. Jamal Murray's the better player, which is shocking to me because I think Jokic is a close to an MVP-level player. But so is Jamal Murray. And yet he also made a blunder. He, too, made a blunder coming away with that ball that Donovan Mitchell turned over. Dude, dribble out the clock? And I remember there was a game, I don't remember if it was this season or last season. I don't remember if it was in the playoffs. I just remember Jamal Murray being roundly criticized at a certain point for dribbling out the clock. And they lost. Denver lost the game. Maybe that was on his mind. I don't know. But dribble out the clock. What's going to happen at worst is they're going to foul you. You're up two. You're going to the line. If you hit one free throw, you ain't losing in regulation. And if you hit two, the game's over. And even if you don't hit it either, you're probably going to win the game. As it was, he gave them a real good chance, a really good chance to win that game, and his very lucky Conley shot didn't go down. Conley, too, by the way, you know, he was brought in to make the difference, and he's one of my favorite players. He's like, if you can't have Chris Paul as your point guard doing the things Chris Paul does, Conley is Chris Paul light. But, whoo, it's been very light this year. He has not been good for that team. And maybe his presence took the ball out of Donovan Mitchell's hand. The team, I think, seemed to operate better, was organized better with Donovan Mitchell with the ball in his hand. And this happens, by the way, you know, maybe with the Celtics too. As much as I think the loss of Gordon Hayward is a big deal, it puts the ball in Marcus Smart's hands a little bit more. And Marcus Smart absorbs those minutes, and he came up big. We're going to get to that too. There's so much to get into. Anyway, here's Jamal Murray after the game.
First off, if we lost the game on that layup, Mike almost hit that shot. I was looking at the ball like, man, if this goes in, I'm gonna be heartbroken. But I've never been so happy to play so bad in my life. That was I messed up in so many different ways, offense and defense, but just my team had my back today. Thank God for them. Thank God for my coaching staff and everybody with me. So we got the job done.
And let me say something about that. Tim Bradley, who's a future Hall of Fame boxer, who works for ESPN, broadcaster for ESPN now. You see him on Max on Boxing, ESPN2, Fridays at 5 p.m., although this Friday at 11 p.m., special time. Tim Bradley, I used to love to interview when I was working for HBO, and I would do like face-offs and different interviews with fighters, because that dude was so honest. Like, Tim Bradley, I thought he didn't deserve the decision against Pacquiao in the first fight, but he thought he did. And if he thought he did, believe me, he really does think he did. He's not just saying that. Bradley never lied on anything. Because when you put it, there are guys more talented than Tim. And a lot of guys thought they wanted to win. Then they fought Tim Bradley. They figured out what really wanting to win, what needing to win was about. The amount of preparation he put in. So when you are that honest with yourself and work that hard, there's no, why front? Tim wouldn't front. Tim told me after the Provodnikov fight, he was slurring his speech for a month. He talked about fear. He talked about the kind of, what crosses his mind, you know, like the kind of damage he's doing when he wants to get out of the game. And he was a warrior, because when you are about it, you don't have to front. You don't have to puff yourself up. You're real. Jamal Murray's real. He messed up, just owned it. And he can laugh about it now because they won. If he lost, I'm sure he wouldn't be joking about it, but he'd still be telling you the truth. What did Jamal Murray or Donovan Mitchell have to hide? They leave it all out on the floor, even on a night where they don't have it. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776, Straight Talk Wireless, everything for less, only at Walmart. And now Ryan Hollins joins us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Ryan, you there?
Max, what is going on, brother? How you been, man? We finally got you back on radio, man, as if we don't have you running your mouth enough on First Take, man.
Listen, how dare you? Let me take me through your playoff highlights, all 8 seconds. I'm going to start with the first one. That's not true. Listen, Ryan Hollins is a great athlete, a great dude, a true friend. Loves me some Ryan Hollins. However, he was the only NBA player who needed a press pass to get into the huddle, I think, back in the day. Did Doc used to let you in the huddle with the Clippers? Were you allowed in, or did you have to show ID? How did that work?
Hey, man, I just put in work, baby.
You put in work. How many years? 11 years altogether?
10 years. Okay. My 11th year was overseas, so I'll say 11 professional, 10 in the NBA, though. 10 in the NBA.
Brother, now let me ask you something. You fool. Why didn't you learn how to shoot a three? You're athletic. You could play defense. If you just would have bombed from three, you'd still be in the NBA. What's up, Ryan?
No, man. Honest to God truth, and this is the way that the NBA's really transformed. Early in my career, I was on the perimeter shooting threes, trying to do crossovers, trying to do all this, you know, amazing stuff. And every coach I ever had would, or an assistant will pull you to the side and go, "Why are you over there doing that? You're never going to do that. You're never going to do that. Why are you even over there wasting your time?" And you would get scorched as a young big back
then. Times have changed.
Working on a, you know, your game outside the perimeter. Seriously.
Did you shoot free throws? I honestly don't know off the top of my head. Did you shoot free throws well?
Yeah, I have a nice touch. I have a nice touch, but I was back when I come in the league in 2006, everything was mid-range, because who we see? Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant. You develop your mid-ranger, you know, like P.J. Brown was one of the ideal bigs. You know, those guys were the ones that were telling you, hey, that's model your game after those guys.
Hold up, Ryan.
And
time
that's
out.
The way you're effective.
Time out. I asked, you said you had a nice touch. You shot 65% from the line for your career. That, for a 7-footer, it's not the worst, but come on, dude. Now, is that because you didn't get enough touches? What do you mean you had a nice touch, 65% from the line?
No, I can shoot. I can shoot. Now, I've had my moments. Listen, I've had my moments. I can shoot. I'm not a shooting the ball off the backboard type of shooter. I have touch. Here's the reality. When you think about guys like DeAndre Jordan or any of those guys, when you only touch the bat, when the first time you touch the basketball is to rebound it, slam dunk it, or shoot a free throw, your free throws aren't always going to be going.
That's
well.
Legit. By the way, even for shooters, if there are some shooters who are just pure, it doesn't matter how often they shoot it, it's going in. But a lot of even really good 3-and-D guys in the league, because they can shoot the three and play defense, they need touches. If they don't get touches, they're not going to shoot it the same way. That's real. Now, meantime, speaking of touches, dude, did you see what these two young guys put, the kind of show that Donovan Mitchell and Jamal Murray just put on in the first round? You know, and by the way, I keep bringing it up as the only real rivalry in the NBA, Ryan, and people started bringing up, what about college? I'm like, you're right. And on the broadcast last night, it's like, what about high school? They've been going at it. They've been going, like, competing against each other really since they were teenagers through every level of basketball. Now on the highest level in the playoffs, both around the same age, both more or less performing the same role for their teams. And in game 7, Donovan Mitchell was playing defense on Jamal Murray, D-ing him up. And the fact that they put on a show for the ages, like when you talk about the all-time great playoff matchups in terms of what individuals did against one another, no one's ever scored that many 40 and 50 point games against each other, two players. I'm speechless about what more can you say about these guys?
Max, I had to eat humble pie. When it came to that series, I was laughing. I was like, this isn't even worth watching. I mean, I was beside myself. But in all reality, honestly, that's one of the greatest playoff first round series that we've ever seen.
I agree.
And Max, you remember this. The only thing I think comparable, if you think back to the Nets and the Celtics, Paul Pierce and Antoine Walker, they were playing the Nets. And I think they were, I mean, it was 20, 30 point comebacks. That was the last super exciting series that I remember. But the difference is,
and AI and Vince went at it one year, but the difference is that in this series, these two guys were having historically great performances. You know, in over two games, Jamal Murray at one point had almost 100 points with zero turnovers. In two games, in the playoffs, in two games. And by the way, he's facing a team whose center, Gobert, is a shot-changing kind of presence on the floor. And in two games, 100 points with no turnovers. Like, I don't know if there has been a series where the two star players, right up until Game 7, there was a fall-off in Game 7, it's true. But even then, Donovan Mitchell willed his team back into it in the third quarter offensively. Donovan Mitchell D'd up Jamal Murray. Like, I can't think of it. Like, you got to go back to, like, Bird and Magic, when you saw two guys who were rivals in college turn pro around the same time, go at it, and see, obviously with them it's in the finals, do more or less the same thing for their teams. Like, this has a chance to be an all-time great rivalry, Ryan.
No, it does. And Max, you know, from a basketball standpoint, it was a perfect storm. Why do I say that? For one, they played in the bubble. In the bubble, it's a shooter's gym because of the depth perception. Because you can see a wall closer versus an empty background, it's much friendlier to the shooter. Two, those are both traditional big men on either side, which means what? In the pick and roll, you don't switch. And Jokic, the Joker, and the Eiffel Tower, what do they call it? What do they call it? Go by the Eiffel Tower? They're in a drop. So when your big guy doesn't want to switch and you play traditional coverage, you allow the guards to have a field day. And the game plan, which normally worked against Jamal Murray, from an opposing team standpoint, the game plan is make Jamal Murray go out and score 50 points. No one else is going to touch the ball. Let's see if he can beat you. He found a way to beat you.
Yeah, that brother
can
beat
you. That was the growth that, you know, Mike Malone asked for, and I played for Mike Malone. And Mike Malone, if you look back historically, you got to give him a lot of credit right now. He's always pushed Jamal Murray to this point, Max, where he said, hey, I need you to be great. I need you to be better. And he calls it how he sees it. Mike is a straight shooter. He always was like that in the locker room. Was like, man, we didn't play that well, or you didn't show up, Jamal. And Jamal Murray took it to heart, man, and he showed up in a major way.
A major way. I love that analysis. So two reasons we saw, like, look, any era where you see amazing things happen is because the era is conducive. Circumstances, the environment's conducive for those kind of performances. So, like, in baseball, when I was a kid, people used to tell me, oh, there are no hitters like, you know, Lou Gehrig or Babe Ruth around today. Look at those numbers. Yeah, right, because they played in an era where you could put up those numbers. In the 70s and 80s, you couldn't, right? But then later on, you could. It's the same thing here. It's not that. Hold on, which kid is that, Ryan?
This is Eve, man. This is Eve. She just, oh my God, this is Eve. She just, this is my little bully, man. She didn't want to hear it.
Yeah, yeah. Ryan Hollins and my kids have played together and everything. He is the nicest family. But anyway, Ryan, these two guys are able to do historical things with that, not only because they're great, but the circumstances allowed it to happen. And you're saying those circumstances are better depth perception because you're in a bubble without the depth issue of the crowd, number one. And number two, because of the two more traditional bigs than is common in this era, there's no switching. And when that happens, the guards, especially if they're talented, can have a field day. That's your analysis as to why these two great young players were able to put up historically amazing numbers. I mean, obviously, it starts with their talent and their will and everything, but those were the that was the environment. Those were the circumstances that allowed it to happen. Ryan Hollins is the host of the Opinionated Seven Footers podcast. Ryan, before I let you go, your boy James Harden has had a great series. And I'm his most vocal critic in the national press in terms of, hey, he has been a choker in his in the playoffs in his career. Like, MVP regular season falls down to an all-star in the playoffs. Still a good player, but not what he is normally. He's changed my mind. Every year, he's gotten a little closer to changing my mind. First, he worked on his defense. Then he started having more good moments than bad. Still felt he choked in big moments, though. This year, he's been fantastic in the first round. Ryan, who is this biggest for right now? Is it James Harden? Is it Russell Westbrook? Is it D'Antoni, whose job is apparently on the line, according to Stephen A. Smith? Is it Chris Paul? Who is this? Is it Daryl Morey, Sam Presti? Who is this Game 7 biggest for tonight?
This is all about James Harden. Here's the fact of the matter. Here's the honest-to-God truth. We have never looked at Daryl Morey. We have never looked at Mike D'Antoni and said, man, you guys are potentially one of the greatest of. You could be one of the greatest of. Man, you're going to go down in history, Mike D'Antoni, for being one of the great. We've never felt that way. There's never been that conversation. When you look at James Harden.
Daryl Morey, but yeah.
When you look at James Harden, Max, am I wrong? You say, man, this guy could be the greatest scorer in history. He's unguardable. Let me tell you something, brother. If he doesn't show up ready to play, this is going to be one of the most historical meltdowns that we have ever seen. The last game, and I look, man, I love me some James Harden. James Harden didn't even want the basketball. He
right.
had
he
listen,
wasn't fighting
man,
for it. Nope, was not fighting
hey,
for
Max,
it.
Hey Max, me and you both covered L.A. Love us some Kobe Bryant. Love Kobe or hate Kobe. Think about when teams, and every team did it, you denied Kobe, you tried to make him work, you tried to, you know, you try to get physical with him. Think about Kobe Bryant chasing after the basketball in big moments.
Right. It's not a matter Kobe that meta world peace. Ron Artest sometimes had to hit the big shot, but that's not because Kobe didn't want the ball. Kobe never shirked that responsibility, and James Harden, even though Westbrook's number was called, James Harden was not fighting hard to get open. That is a legitimate criticism. You can hear more of that kind of straight talk on Ryan Hollins' podcast, the Opinionated Seven Footers podcast. Thanks, Ryan. We're going to hear from you real soon, I hope. Nuggets with a Job Well Done is brought to you by Napa. Whether you stop by a locally owned Napa Auto Parts, Napa Auto Care, or visit Napa online, if you need help with your ride, you can count on Napa know-how. Remember, Ryan Hollins, the Opinionated Seven Footers podcast. He does excellent analysis. All right, look, the Celtics, that's a problem. The Raptors have a problem. Could they really win the whole thing this season? Could the Celtics win the championship right now?
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Chris Paul and the Thunder battle it out with Russell Westbrook and the Rockets. They were traded for each other. How? And they're in a Game 7. And it's not even about that, as good as that storyline is. James Harden going to get knocked out in the first round? Does James Harden want the ball at the end of the game or not? I know that's the stupid sports guy take. Well, there's a lot of players on a team, and it's not just stop. You want to be one of the greatest who ever lived? You got to fight a little harder to get open on the last possession of the game. Presented by Indeed. Coverage begins at 8:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. You know, I've been saying Reggie Theus forever, and I knew it was wrong. Not Reggie Theus, sorry. What's his name? Reggie Theus. Daniel Theus. And I knew it was wrong. The Celtics center, undersized center. But, like, I have this like, kind of mental block with names. Not only can I not remember anyone else's name, I once created bad feelings in a meeting with some executives because I told them that if I could just refer to them all as Max or Kellerman, I won't forget their names. They didn't seem to like that. But anyway, I called Evander Holyfield for like the first 5 years of his career. I don't know what it is. I think I inherited it. I used to listen to my parents call him Ronald Reagan. And I would say, Ma, Dad, his name is Reagan. What's the matter with you? You can't remember that? It's like it's everywhere you look. So I did it with Theus. And then I always forget. I know it's not right, but I forget. Like, what do they call him? Tice. But I'm not sure if they're saying Thice or Tice. I don't know. Whatever, he's good. He's a good defensive player. He's just a good player, period. And that's the thing about the Celtics. You think of them as, you know, sometimes people try to promote a player into a big three. Like the Lakers, their big three of LeBron and AD and Kyle Kuzma. No. Wait, their big three of one of the three greatest players who ever lived, one of the handful of greatest power forwards who ever lived, and a below average starter. What? Why? What? No. That's not a big three. It's a big two and a guy. Even Miami, who had a legitimate big three, LeBron and Dwayne Wade were MVP level players. And Chris Bosh, who's become underrated, he's great, Hall of Famer. Chris Bosh was not quite an MVP level player. He was an all-star. Even an all-star plus every year. Not quite an MVP. The Celtics don't have, because Tatum is still young, the Celtics don't have and he made a couple mental errors at the end of the game. The Celtics don't have a big three with an MVP candidate unless Tatum blossoms into that throughout these playoffs. And he has the chance to. He has that kind of ability. But they do have legitimately a big four in the sense that they have four all-star caliber players in their starting lineup. Four of them. When Gordon Hayward is healthy, if he's not still all-star caliber, he's certainly an above-average starter. To be like a starter is an above-average player because there are more than five players on a team. There are more than 10 players on a team. If you're in the starting lineup, you're probably above average. I'm talking about by the standards of a starting player, Gordon Hayward is above average. Jaylen Brown is above average. Kemba Walker, clearly. And Jason Tatum, that's four. Tice is above average. He may not quite be on their level, like offensively, right? But he's not just an average front court player. He's above average. That's five. Now Gordon Hayward goes down. And of the offensive special pieces, now you're down to three. And none of them are MVP level players yet. So it's like, maybe they can't get it done. Oh yeah, Marcus Smart steps up. And in crunch time, he played like an all-star, didn't he? Here's Marcus Smart. By the way, for the undefeated playoff Celtics, the Celtics and the Heat, they have yet to lose in the playoffs. Here's Marcus Smart after the game.
My teammates believe in me. This coaching staff, this whole team, organization believe in me. And, you know, coming in before I hit that first one to get on that little streak, my team is just telling me we need a big play from you. Come out and be you. And that's what it did. They kept leaving me open. A couple of my shots was in and out. I knew they were going to start fall. Just keep shooting.
You need someone to play defense on the other team's best offensive player. You need a guy to hit a big shot. Boy, Marcus Smart. Remember when the Lakers won some meaningless game against the Celtics because it was a rivalry game. And I was on LA radio going, why did you win that game? You could draft Marcus Smart instead of Julius Randle. But the Celtics got Marcus Smart, and the Lakers had Julius Randle, and Julius Randle has bounced around. He can do some things, but Marcus Smart is the part of a team right now, an important part of a team that can win a championship right now. The answer to the question I teased before the break, can the Celtics win it all? The answer is yes, and they're getting Gordon Hayward back if they progress past this round. Yes, the Celtics are capable of winning a championship this year, and so are the Heat. It's one of the most interesting playoffs, like postseasons, that I can remember in my lifetime watching the NBA. This thing is up for grabs.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio, ESPN News, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 80. And on your smart speaker, reach us at 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. And the Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Gonna get right down to it.
We got you covered.
Let me tell you what I think of me.
No doubt.
Max, you
oh, there he is.
It.
Nipsey. Feeling myself. Go. I love this song.
All right, you teased it. Now we want to know, does Alvin Kamara, who held, they say just unexcused absences the previous few days, does he deserve McCaffrey or Derrick Henry
tight money.
No, and those are two of the only running backs,
that's
maybe
not how
along
you play.
With
that's
Saquon.
Not how you play. That's not how you play.
Nah, son.
Proceed.
He's not as good as those guys, but he's a special offensive weapon. And even though most teams that give running backs big deals live to regret it, whether it's Todd Gurley being retained by the Rams or it's Le'Veon Bell going to the Jets as a free agent, the fact is there should be some special exemption in the CBA, like in the salary cap for running backs. They get so messed up. It's so messed up what happens to them. But you can't pay them big money. However, Kamara has a lot of leverage right now because this is a team that could win the Super Bowl right now. And he is a dynamic piece in their offense. So they're going to have to pay him a premium over what they'd like to give him at this moment, I believe. What's next?
Yeah, it really ends well, like you said, with running backs. All right, Keanu Reeves, he turns 56 today, Max.
Ah.
Keanu Reeves is the best non-acting actor. He's the GOAT.
Whoa, who's on that list? I think you're right. He can carry a movie even though he can't act. Who else does? You know who did that? You know who did that on TV? Seinfeld did that. Seinfeld couldn't act, and that was kind of the gag. It's sort of what made him funny on the show. But you're right. Keanu Reeves, Point Break to, like, The Matrix. It's not like he ever convinced. He was in Bram Stoker
stuff.
Yeah, John Wick is so much fun. He was in Coppola's Dracula. And
you can't, like, Bram Stoker's.
You would think if a guy can't act, oh, what ruins it is Keanu Reeves. No, if anything, he makes it better. It's true. I think he is. He's the best non-actor actor. Unless you include Schwarzenegger belongs in there, too.
Hey, Patrick Mahomes better get a prenup.
I mean, this is common sense. He's got how many? Hundreds and hundreds of millions.
No doubt.
No doubt. I keep forgetting to say no doubt and nah, son.
Yeah. All right, last one before we hit the callers. Nuggets will challenge the Clippers.
Nah, son. I retweeted Shea Serrano today. I'm going to read it because I think it's very funny. And the comments are also very funny, actually. But what is it? All right, I retweeted this thing. A man enters a room. It's completely dark. He clicks the lights on. Kawhi Leonard is sitting in a chair in the middle of the room. He's wide awake, and this is all done like stage directions, you know, like in brackets. The man hands Kawhi a folder. Kawhi opens it. There's only one thing in there. It's a picture of Jamal Murray. Kawhi, okay. Like, you know, Kawhi's got the mission statement, Raj. Shut down Jamal Murray. Got it. Cyborg is going to be on that kid now. Look, you're running with, like, Jamal Murray is the real deal, but Kawhi is the big dog in the NBA. No one wants it with Kawhi. Who wants it with Kawhi? LeBron started showing it that he wanted it with Kawhi later in the season and then in the bubble reopen before the playoffs. Let's see what happens in the playoffs. That's Kawhi time. Kawhi, LeBron did this too. It took him a while to get there, but he's done this too. As great as LeBron normally is, when it matters most, he gets better. That's the highest level of clutch play. Like, a lot of times, guys like Derek Jeter or Kobe Bryant or Tom Brady get extra credit for being clutch just because they stay the same guy in the clutch situations. And they're so great that they look clutch. But do they elevate in clutch situations? No, they're the same guy. Fernando Valenzuela. Curt Schilling. Sandy Koufax. Michael Jordan. Mariano Rivera. Those guys, and then, by the way, Tom Brady, as his career went on, in the second half of his career, Brady became a guy like this. When it mattered most, they actually elevated, actually got better. But it's hardest to get better when you're already just about the best who ever did it. Like Michael Jordan or Rivera. That's what LeBron did in the second half of his career. He's already at the highest possible level. He gets even better when it matters most. But guys, Kawhi has done that his whole career. He didn't have to grow into that role. Whenever the pressure's been on, Kawhi raises that level from wherever it is. Now, it's a little easier to raise the level when you're not operating. That's the best player we've seen since Michael Jordan. He got even better. No, that hasn't been Kawhi. So it's a little easier because you got more room to improve there when you're not already at the upper limits of greatness. But at this point in LeBron's career and Kawhi's career, during the regular season, they have roughly equivalent value. And what Kawhi has shown throughout his career is when you need him most, he gets even better. Will LeBron be able to match him if and when they meet? Because I expect they will meet. Juan in California. You're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, Max. Hey, Max. How you doing? Long-time listener. Man, I go back to you and Marcellus Wiley back in the day.
You got 20 seconds, then they're going to cut us off.
All right. Real quick, say if there was an upset somehow, and it was either OKC or Houston, who gives Clippers the harder problem?
Maybe Houston, just because I think they have a higher ceiling. OKC may be a better constructed team, but Houston has a higher ceiling. Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. What a Game 7 last night. We're going to get into it.
Thanks for listening to the Max Kellerman Show. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, or wherever you stream your audio.